nervous about knowing what's a good deal and how to spot a dodgy seller. Well, in today's Ask the Expert slot, we are talking about buying a second-hand car, and I'm joined in studio by Michael Rochford, Managing Director of MotorCheck.ie. Good morning. Good afternoon. It's just seconds after 12. Tell me about MotorCheck.ie. What can you do for people?
Well, MotorCheck.ie is an online used car history check. So we check all of the background data on a car and present it in report format. And all you have to do is visit the website, put in the registration number of the car. You're presented with a list of reports that we can provide all the way from a valuation right through to a full history check. And then pay a small fee that can range from €8 up to €35, and you'll get the information instantly in front of you on the screen.
Now, suppose someone hasn't been near a service garage for years. Mm. I mean, then there'll be nothing. The thing is off the radar.
Well, not necessarily, because there's a lot of touch points that we would gather data from. The official sources, such as revenue commissioners for car imports, and when a car is registered for the very first time in the country, through to the Department of Transport, road tax history.
Oh, you'll get that
history.
As well?
Yes.
You'll know the car has been on the road or off the road. I mean, if someone comes to you trying to sell a car and says, I know the mileage is low, but it was off the road for 2 years.
Yes, exactly.
And the tax says it hasn't.
Yeah, and that's something we can show on the report. Full road tax history, the dates of expiry of all the tax discs, and very often when you look down through the elements on the report, it's things like that that should trigger questions. If we can identify a gap in the previous taxation history, the natural question to the seller is, well, what happened during that period? Why was the car not taxed?
Now, we're talking about possibly next year maybe 100,000 cars to be sold in the Irish market, new cars. This contrasts with over 100,000 being sold in Dublin alone back in the Celtic Tiger days. But the second-hand car sales are much more plentiful.
Yes,
than new car sales.
Yeah. The used car market is really the lifeblood of the motor trade. The transactions are, there's almost a tenfold multiplier when you look at the number of transactions. There's about, to the end of October this year, in the new car market, there's 95,000 transactions, whereas in the used car market, there's 720,000 transactions. So almost a tenfold difference there. It's huge. There's a lot of activity around it. But the difference, of course, when you're buying a used car versus a new car is, you know, you can either buy privately from a dealer, but you're buying something that's effectively used. It's not just off the factory line.
So I mean, if I buy a new car, I can have a very generous warranty from some manufacturers and distributors, which gives me reassurance. If I'm buying a five-year-old second-hand car, I may have no such assurance, except what I have a right to under consumer law.
Yes, yeah. There's certain rights under consumer law. If you're buying privately, it's very much, you know, the old phrase, caveat emptor, buyer beware. There's not a hell of a lot of protection if you're buying privately, so you really have to have your wits about
you. Because it is a contract with just two private individuals rather than something that's being offered for sale on the open market. Now, if I'm buying a second-hand car, you have some do's and don'ts.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some things to watch out for. There's one thing, I think the biggest thing just to be aware of when you're buying a used car, if people could take away from today, is don't let your emotions take over. You know, take a very cold outlook on the car and don't fall in love with it until you've done all of the checks on it and you're satisfied that it's the car for you. Because, as you know, when you get emotionally involved in something, you tend to overlook maybe the pitfalls that might be there.
So you see the lovely cabriolet that you've always wanted.
You're in there with your roof down, you can smell the leather, you can visualise yourself out in the open road. And
yet you've got a family of five and not everyone wants to have the hair blown around in the back of the cabriolet.
Yeah, that's it. I think, you know, one of the pieces of advice I'd always give is bring someone along with you, because you might be falling in love with the car, but someone that might be able to act as a buffer and bet you can get them to sense check your emotion in the deal.
There are some cars which are absolute bargains on the face of it, you know, you can think of some of the higher powered luxury cars back from maybe 2006, 2007, and they seem dirt cheap, and there tends to be good reason that they're petrol, not diesel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the cars these days, and especially the newer cars, CO2 emissions and so on, manufacturers have gone to extraordinary lengths to get the emissions down on those cars. And the tax regime on the older cars and the higher CO2 emission cars, I think it's after it changed in 2008. Any car registered pre-2008 is on the old CC.
Yeah, and even though you might have a very efficient car under the old regime, if it's 2.5 litres, you pay
by the
one
CC,
way or the other.
Yeah. And nowadays, there's extraordinary things being done with technology to get those CO2 emissions down, and very, very low tax rates on even big, powerful cars.
Now, when you open the bonnet of a used car, and many of them, you know, they clean up, they'll steam clean the engine, and a lot of them have nice cladding now that you don't see the spark plugs anymore. It's all nice aluminium cladding, and that can be cleaned very easily. Mm. So you look in the engine compartment and it's clean as a whistle. So what can the layman do now to determine whether or not the car is a dog or otherwise?
Yeah, and you don't have to be a mechanic. I'm certainly not a mechanic, and I'm not very mechanically minded, but you use your common sense, and you use all your senses, your touch, smell, sight, all of it. So what I'd say is there are some very simple checks, especially if you're going to buy the car privately. One of the old tricks of the trade was get the car warmed up before the buyer arrives, if it was giving trouble or if it's giving trouble started. So put your hand on the bonnet, see has it been warmed up, lift the bonnet even just to see is the engine block warm, has the seller been running the car to have it warm and warm for you so that it'll start first time. Look, when you start it up, look for smoke in the back. Is it blowing smoke out the back? Just do a visual inspection of all the body panels. Throw your eye down along the body panel to make sure are all the panels lined up. Is there any signs of accident damage or accident repair? Overspray if any of the panels have been resprayed around the rubbers, things like that. Check the brakes for sponginess. One of the old tricks as well for the shocks, put your weight over the bonnet, over the wheel arch, press down, and it should spring back up.
Sluggish coming back up, then the shocks are shot.
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of simple checks you can do
say,
like that.
And a lot of people will be doing these kind of transactions after work, and you're saying, don't buy in the dusk.
No, definitely not. No, don't buy in the dark, because obviously, you know, in dim light, you won't see possible signs of damage. And also in the rain, that's a definite no-no. Even if in daylight, if the car is wet or covered in raindrops, you won't see possible panel misalignment or little dings or scrapes or damage that would be obvious in the daylight and in the dry.
Now, you can have a car that maybe hasn't been serviced, so the handbrake is a bit kind of loose. You know, you have to pull it up a long way to get it to stop. How do you make a decision whether those kind of little things are important or otherwise? In other words, the guy says, look, I know the car needs a service, but I'm not going to spend a couple of €100 on a service when I'm flogging the thing.
Yeah, well, it's all about, I suppose, negotiation at that point. And again, you know, a lot of people won't have the luxury of being a mechanic or being able to bring a mechanic with them. But do a lot of the small sense checks around the car and then use that in your negotiation. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I'd give is write down a list of checks before you go. Write down a list of questions you want to ask and bring it with you. Because when you're there on the day and the emotions are taking over, you forget all of these things. And if you have it written down or someone with you to remind you, that's all the better.
Other things like worn rubbers on the pedals, but then the guy just, he's cute, he replaces them. Should you be suspicious of brand new rubbers on the pedals?
Yeah, and that's one thing that you could definitely, it would be a telltale sign, if you like, and things like lifting the carpet mats as well, because, you know, you get those heel indentations in the carpet mats.
So it says 20,000 kilometres on the clock. And there's a heel dentation which says 75.
Yeah, yeah. You just look for wear and tear around the vehicle in general. Has the leather been smoothed over on the steer wheel or on the gear lever, on the handbrake lever? Are the carpet mats abnormally worn? And just compare that to the mileage on the vehicle.
Now, clocking a vehicle, there was a time it was done with an electric drill because it was a mechanical thing. Now it's digital, and we're told it couldn't be done. Now we're told fellas with a laptop can do it quite easily.
Yeah, that's the tragedy of technology. It's so easy to clock a car nowadays. It's a matter of just taking a laptop with a piece of software. You can actually hire, they're called mileage correction experts. You'll see them advertising classifieds and so on. And they will just lift the bonnet, plug into the car's central computer with the laptop, and the job is done in about 10 minutes. And it's largely undetectable with the naked eye, because you used to look at the old cylindrical dials to see where they misaligned, look for wear and tear around the dashboard, but there's none of that anymore. And it's so easy to have a car clocked.
But can you therefore find out that it has been clocked as easily with the diagnostic?
That's the thing. You can in some cars, and you can't in others.
Because you know the way they say, everything you ever do on your computer is somewhere in the
memory. It's recorded, there's a chip. Like some cars, it's as easy as the key fob, there's a chip in that, and that will record the true mileage. In others, it's not as easy. Even with the diagnostics, it's not obvious. But one of the serious dangers of clocking, though, is that act of interfering with the car's onboard computer can very often disengage a lot of the safety warning lights and so on that might lead to other things or other warnings not being obvious to you on the car.
Some of the text coming in: a second-hand car business has been protected for decades. Why is our car market allowed to apply a double tax in spite of various Euro treaties allowing free movement of goods and services? That's where I can go. That's not really your area, but the business of VRT, which is very expensive.
Yes, it is, and it can account on a new car, it can account for, when you think taxes, there's VAT of 21% and VRT of up to 30%, you know. It's huge.
Why then does it make sense for some people to import cars from Britain?
It's horses for courses. You can get some very good value over there in terms of just buying a used car from a dealer, from an auction. Depending on how the exchange rate goes in VRT, you can go on to sites like the Revenue Commissioner site, or indeed MotorCheck has an online VRT calculator. Calculate your VRT. And then if you don't mind the transport costs and so on, it can very often just be economically
people
very
used to
sound.
Say you get a better spec on a British car.
Yeah, and that's still to a certain extent true. Although cars in Ireland now are very well specced, and they're certainly catching up. But they tend to be that little bit better in the UK still.
Now, one of the things that you'd be terrified of is that you part with your hard-earned cash, and the guys looking for a private sale will say, I want a bank draft, I don't want a check. Yeah. They're not going to give you the keys of the car and the documentation. And then it turns out there's money owing on the car. It's a higher purchase. Can you protect against
Yes,
that?
Absolutely. One of the things that we do at MotorCheck with a full check, and also you can buy a finance check separately, is check the finance history on the car. So whether the car has been financed through contract hire or hire purchase. If it's a bank loan, you don't have to. Sorry, if it's a personal loan, you don't have to worry about it, because it's a personal loan to the individual who took out. So the debt will stay with them.
Yeah.
If it's asset finance, so hire purchase or contract hire or PCP or so on, the debt is with the car. The bank owns the asset.
With the hire purchase, it isn't owned by the person on the very last payment.
Absolutely, yeah. And the bank owns it, and the bank, if payments stop, the bank have the right to take back the car before a certain amount has been repaid. The bank are completely within their rights to take that back.
You say don't meet someone in a car park. Where should you meet them?
You should really insist on meeting the seller, if it's a private seller, at their home, so that you can verify their identity. One of the things to look out for is the logbook or vehicle registration certificate. So if they will meet you at their home, great, you can verify that very easily. If they won't, and very often people just are nervous about doing things at their own home, I suppose it's a natural cautiousness people might have, and you can understand that. But at the very, very least, ask for some sort of identity from them and check that their name and address matches the name and address on the vehicle registration certificate, and that's one way of verifying the identity of the person.
Finally, NCT, does that give you reassurance when you're buying a second-hand car?
To a certain extent, it does. The NCT is a very, very comprehensive test.
You know, if you have one that's only a couple of months old, does that tell you that by and large this car is a good car?
Yeah, by and large it should be sound enough. There are certain limitations to the NCT as well that you just need to be aware of. It won't check absolutely everything. You should, you know, check for previous write-off history. Has the car been involved in an accident? Just ask those sort of things. Satisfy yourself that all the crash repairs have been done to a certain standard.
And the final question is about discerning what is an acceptable price for a second-hand car. If you buy from a garage, they obviously have all the overheads and so on. They may also offer you some sort of a warranty, which mm-hmm. will be enforceable as long as the garage doesn't go out of business, whereas you don't have that with a private sale. So what kind of a discount on, say, a typical garage price should you be looking for buying privately?
When you're buying privately, you're probably expecting around 10% less. Paying 10% less than
what's advertised on the garage forecourt.
Exactly, yeah. Because, as you say, a private seller doesn't have the overhead expense of a garage. They're not giving warranty with the car, etc. And they don't usually prepare it for sale the way a garage does. A garage will get all of the little minor bumps and scrapes repaired, get it valeted, and so on. So all of that overhead isn't there. You're looking for a significant write-down on the
Michael Ratchford, who's Managing Director of MotorCheck.ie, and you can check out that site yourselves to see exactly what they do. Thank you very much for joining us in the studio today. Well, now,